This week on Making Contact.
They come here every day saying they will remove us, that they will take us away, that they will burn our houses, and we don't want that. And nobody's going to remove us. If they want to take us away, they will have to kill us.
Deep in the rainforests of Chiapas, Mexico, indigenous communities and campesinos are struggling for survival. They stand accused of damaging the Montes Azules jungle. This is just a pretext, however, say non-governmental organizations that are tracking the situation. What's at stake are potentially lucrative natural resources such as water and oil, and biodiversity. From the vantage point of corporate interests in the Mexican government, the people of Montes Azules, some of them supporters of the Zapatista National Liberation Army, stand in the way. On this edition of Making Contact, we go to Montes Azules and hear about threats by the Mexican government to forcibly remove dozens of communities from land that indigenous people and campesinos claim is rightly theirs. I'm Philip Babich, your host this week on Making Contact, an international radio program seeking to create connections between people, vital ideas, and important information. It's another day of pensive waiting for the five families here at this government shelter in the town of Comitán, east of Montes Azules. It's musty like damp clothing. Children occupy themselves by jumping on beds or distracting one another with tricks and funny faces. A mother lays on her side and nurses her infant. The adults are decidedly forlorn. 25 people, including children, have been living here for 3 months. There are two rooms, each the size of a classroom, a small kitchen area, and a bathroom. Confinement for the people here who inhabited the expansiveness of the Montes Azules jungle until Mexican authorities came to their community called Lucio Cabana, also known as Arroyo San Pablo, on December 19, 2002. One of the community members, Domingo Perez Gomez, says they're still waiting for the Mexican government to deliver on the promise it made to them that day, new land.
Aquí se han estado desanimando porque ya quieren ver sus casas, su tierra.
We have been very disillusioned here. We miss our houses and our land and our animals. We are not able to work. The government authorities found land for us in the municipality of Palenque, but they say the land is too expensive. And besides, these lands are no good for working.
Gomez shows the contract they signed with the Mexican authorities. It was their only hope for a brighter future when they decided to leave Lucio Cabana peacefully, avoiding a violent confrontation with officials from the Federal Preventive Police, or PFP, which is essentially the police force on national lands.
The PFP, the Federal Preventive Police, arrived, about 20 of them, I think, and with Marines who came by boat in the river. They expected us to react with arms, I think. That's why they arrived armed in uniform in a boat to fight. But we didn't resist. We just went with apprehension. As we saw ourselves surrounded, we accepted to leave, but we accepted with the condition that we would get 20 hectares of land per family, as according to Article 27 of the Mexican Constitution. The Federal Preventative Police told us that they would give them 5 hectares, but that's not good enough. We said 20 hectares so we would have enough for wood and everything that we needed. Article 27 provides this for poor people.
A downpour falls from the sky, rain almost as thick as water poured from a glass. Article 27 doesn't have the same meaning it once had, not since NAFTA took effect on January 1, 1994, the day the Zapatistas launched the rebellion in Chiapas, a struggle that now continues more peacefully through political organizing and education. A result of the Mexican Revolution in the early 1900s, Article 27 essentially guaranteed land to poor campesinos for farming, raising livestock, and acquiring natural resources such as wood for fire. NAFTA changed that, a key reason why the Zapatista National Liberation Army emerged from the mountains of Chiapas that New Year's Day and proclaimed to the world, "Ya basta, enough." Now the Zapatistas and their supporters have been pushed back into the jungles of Montes Azules and the Lacandon.
Thank you.
The only way into Montes Azules is by plane. Communities there are hundreds of miles from the nearest road. Campesinos walk for hours, sometimes days, to reach other communities within the jungle. A delegation from North America is going to visit a community called Nuevo San Gregorio, which was just placed on a government list for relocation. These men show the delegation their milpa, or cornfield, to demonstrate that their agricultural methods are not damaging the jungle, as the government claims. The dense patches of corn stalks seem to compete for room to grow with the rest of the jungle's plant life. The campesinos are sure to point out that they don't burn down the jungle to make room for the crops, a method known as slash and burn, one of the chief accusations against communities in Montes Azules.
We don't need to touch the mountains. We respect the mountains because they are part of the sacred Mother Earth. She gives us everything. And if we clear forests, it might not rain. Here monkeys live, deers, guacamaya, jaguars, and everything would disappear.
Nuevo San Gregorio, which was established more than 20 years ago, is part of a group of six communities that are allied together. While other communities are affiliated with the Zapatistas, these communities are members of a rural association called Arique Independiente. As evening approaches, someone blows into a cow's horn to call the community together. People have walked for hours from three of the other communities to meet the delegation. But dusk comes too soon, and not all the representatives are present. So they collectively decide to postpone the meeting until early the next morning. Instead, there's music, a three-piece band, a guitar missing two strings, a violin missing one, and a three-string bass guitar. The next morning, a Tzotzil indigenous woman, with her children clinging to her legs, spoke out against the Mexican government's plans to relocate her community, Nueva Israel, and the others presently in Montes Azules.
We're very tired of the government coming and threatening to displace them. They say that they are going to move them to other communities. But how can they do this? These are lands that we don't know. We don't know what the quality of land would be like. And how can they move us with our children to a place where we have to start from nothing? We won't be moved. We're not willing to be moved. God left us here so we could work this land in a way that we haven't destroyed it. And we're not willing to be moved to another place. We want the government to stop threatening us.
Another Tzotzil woman from Rancho Curaçao urged the delegation to bring their cries for help to the attention of the world.
Everyone who works in the media, please get the word out about what's happening here in Montes Azules and our six communities, with the forced relocations and the threats of being forcibly displaced. We also demand that the land titles be regularized for these six communities. We are very much against these outside plans, like Plan Puebla Panama, from taking place.
Plan Puebla Panama, the mammoth development project that would bring highways, railroads, dams, canals, dry docks, and low-wage factories, maquiladoras, to southern Mexico and Central and South America, is on everyone's minds. Indigenous people here, many of them Mayan descendants, say the Mexican government wants to remove them from Montes Azules, not to protect the rainforest, but to clear the way for corporate interests. Nicolas Morales Moshan is one of the leaders in Nuevo San Gregorio.
Nosotros, como plan del gobierno, no aceptamos de Plan Puebla Panamá, donde cada área que quieren construir la eléctrica.
We don't accept the government's Plan Puebla Panamá, where in each area they want to construct hydroelectric dams, We aren't in agreement with that. And also, the plan to dislodge us from Montes Cezules. With this, we won't have land to live off of or to produce from. I have memories of my parents and grandparents and where they used to work, in fincas, large land holdings, sort of like a mafia owner. We weren't owners of the land. That's why we had to come here, as we are originally from Chiapas, and as our grandparents were the Lacandon Maya, and we came here to live. Here we are harvesting corn and beans. We want there to be dignity and justice. We don't want to be displaced because we are in our land, our Mother Earth, which gives us corn and beans in order to survive. We don't want to go to the cities, where there's lots of drug addiction. We want to live in a sustainable way, which is completely opposite to the way the government wants us to do.
It's more than land that the communities here want to preserve. It's a way of life that's at stake.
Bueno, nosotros podemos difundir, o sea, nombramos comisión y buscar así derechos humanos, aunque trae sus científicos.
What we are trying to say is that although they bring their scientists, say they will take better care of the environment, it's not true because they have caused a lot of damage. Because as you can see in the cities where there are factories, there's a lot of pollution. I've gone to Mexico City 4 times. The factories are very small, but they're polluting a lot. You can't see the stars there, whereas here at night, you can see that there isn't so much contamination, and there aren't any factories, and that's why we don't want factories here. Because if not, you'll just see smoke in the atmosphere. The federal government says the ozone layer is thinning. The sun will shine directly, and there will be more heat, but we don't do that. But these international factories are affecting it very much, and that's why we, as indigenous, don't want this to happen. Because we, the people of the Mayan faces, know how to take care of the land, as you can see it now.
We'll have more on Montes Azules in just a few moments. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information about this program, please give us a call. It's toll-free, 800-529-5736. Call that same phone number for CD or cassette copies. That's 800-529-5736. You can also visit our website at radioproject.org. That's radioproject.org. It was in the heart of the Lacandon jungle, which is adjacent to Montes Azules, that the Zapatista National Liberation Army was born. Since their historic New Year's Day rebellion in 1994, the Zapatistas and their support communities have been pushed back into the jungle. Many observers say the Mexican government wants to forcibly remove communities in Montes Azules and the Lacandon to not only clear the way for corporate interests, but to dismantle the Zapatista movement. Correspondent Luz Ruiz has more.
Crickets, howling monkeys, tropical birds, and the running water of rivers are some of the sounds we can hear in the depths of the southern Mexican jungle. Here, in the village of Ignacio Allende, a Zapatista support-based community, words like dignity, justice, and permanence accompany the jungle noises as the threat of expulsion hangs in the air. Since January 1, 1994, when the Zapatista National Liberation Army rose up in arms against the Mexican government and neoliberal policies in a struggle for land, indigenous rights, and culture, they have become renowned worldwide. The Zapatistas have been organizing and providing services in many sectors, including health, education, and rights, as well as developing fair trade practices, to mention a few of their efforts. Located within the Montes Azules Bioreserve, a federally protected area since 1972, Ignacio Allende is one of the 49 communities that inhabits the zone and suffers the effects and threats of being forcibly removed. Governmental officials claim these communities need to be removed to protect the rainforest and stimulate the economy, but Zapatista communities located in the southern Chapin jungle say otherwise. Underlying these issues lies a decades-long struggle for the respect and recognition of common landholdings, or ejidos. The concept was established in 1917 in Article 27 of the Mexican Constitution through land and agrarian reform laws that bought large, privately owned ranches and redistributed them in ejidos, or communally owned lands. A schoolteacher from Ignacio Allende says the continuing struggle for land led the Zapatistas and their spokesperson, Subcomandante Marcos, to organize.
Why did the Indians rise up in 94? It is because of a lack of land. In our native land, the ejidal members, the children of the ejidatarios, like us, have no land. We don't want to steal. We don't want to rob the bank. We prefer to come here to die in the jungle, not to die because of stealing. In 94, the Indians took up arms, thanks to Marcos. He opened the eyes of all of Mexico. Some campesinos have recuperated ranches. Those poor campesinos need to have a piece of land. In our native land, there are about 6,000 young people without land, without work.
Another representative of the threatened autonomous community, Ignacio Allende, says the Mexican government has been actively intimidating them.
El gobierno federal ha venido a amenazar por medio de ejército.
The federal government has threatened us through the army. It has come threatening us through patrols, by air, in helicopters, in rafts. But we are here resisting up to this day, and we are going to continue where we are. We are willing to shed blood for dignity, willing to give our blood for our children, who are growing so that they can work the land. They're going to grow up here. That is why we are willing to give our blood that runs in our veins. This land is what our children are going to enjoy in the future. These patrols are making the country violent. The federal government is looking for a new war in our Mexico. It is not the EZLN, and it is not us. We want a solution. We want dialogue.
Intimidation, military overflights, and hostility of paramilitary groups, primarily in the Montes Azules Integral Biosphere Reserve, RIVMA, and the Lacandon Jungle area, have been strongly denounced by autonomous authorities of the Zapatista municipality of Ricardo Flores Magón, located in the jungle territory. According to an article written by Herman Bellinghausen for the national newspaper La Jornada, on January 9, 2002, 100 soldiers accompanied two public ministry agents to the Zapatista community of Laguna El Suspiro. The government officials offered money to the women there so they would leave. This was one of the earliest notifications of expulsion to a Zapatista community. The federal government has continued with their plans to remove communities settled in Montes Azules. On April 12, 2003, a government-sponsored incursion into Ignacio Allende took place. 40 machete-wielding Lacandon and Chol Indians, accompanied by two government officials from PROFEPA, the Office of the Attorney General for Environmental Protection, and others from the SEMARNAT, the Environmental and Natural Resources Office, and the National Commission for Protected Natural Areas, descended upon Ignacio Allende using military boats and government transportation, threatening a violent displacement and stealing two video cameras from reporters and human rights observers. Marisela, a 15-year-old girl from Ignacio Allende, was a witness to the hostile intrusion.
We're scared because they were going to enter to the community and we didn't know what they wanted. All the women grabbed their machetes and sticks, so if they came inside, we would have to rise against them. They come here every day saying they will remove us, that they will take us away, that they will burn our houses, and we don't want that. We want this to be over, to be resolved. We want to leave here like the rest of the people does. Nobody's going to remove us. If they want to take us away, they will have to kill us.
Ernesto Ledesma is coordinator of the Center for Social and Economic Research, CAPICE, an organization that has been analyzing and documenting the Montes Azules case. He says the communities in Montes Azules are not a threat to the environment, but rather to the government's political power. As an example, Ledesma points to the community of Ricardo Flores Magón that has good relations with members of the Institutional Revolutionary Party, or PRI, the major political party that lost the presidency to Vicente Fox.
En Montes Azules la pelea va a seguir.
In Montes Azules, the fight will continue in the economic front, in the political front, in the geographical positioning within the area, and not only in Montes Azules, but also in the surrounding areas. In the autonomous municipality of Ricardo Flores Magón, which is not your average Zapatista municipality, because it is one of the most strongly organized. Priestly communities recognize them as the legitimate authorities, and whenever there are conflicts between a priista and a Zapatista, authorities from both groups have to sit down together and mediate. In the face of this, we are now seeing that with increased pressure to remove the communities and to implement development projects, there begins to be more affinity within Priista communities and Zapatista communities. That's why there are so many paramilitaries in the region, because the only resource left for the government is to detain these alliances is through paramilitary forces. And what helps support this is impunity. What we have seen in the last year in the press is paramilitaries this, paramilitaries that. And what we hear about the least is the military forces that are the real operators. So the army is going to maintain their current bases, and in certain moments their presence and operations are going to escalate, because it's their only way of guaranteeing that alliances are not built within communities in the face of these forced removals regarding land sales and displacements. It is their most important strategy to keep the communities divided.
Ledesma says there could be serious political costs for the Mexican government if it tampers with the Zapatista communities. By comparison, Ledesma recalls the political fallout from the Acteal massacre in December 1997, where 32 women and 13 men from a Tzotzil pacifist group, the Abejas, in a community of the highlands of Chiapas, were brutally murdered by paramilitary forces.
Above all, with a government like Vicente Fox's, where his international image is fundamental, and in the Zapatista movement, through their emblematic figure of Subcomandante Marcos, but not only the Subcomandante, rather all that Zapatismo means, and with the strength of all of the communities, Fox's government knows that attacking, exterminating, eradicating Zapatistas through violence has a huge, huge political cost. For example, do you remember Acteal in 1997? Acteal was not a minor thing. If you look at it this way, Chiapas lost its governor. He was forced to resign. But not only the governor, the Secretary of State also lost his job. So in this case, if there's an attempt to crush a movement that has a strong revendication in different sectors of the hemisphere and the planet, like the Zapatistas have, then the political cost could be too high for the government like Vicente Fox.
Amid threats to leave their land or suffer the violent consequences, representatives from Ignacio Allende have called on human rights observers to be present for when government officials return. It is yet to be seen what the future holds for communities in Montes Azules as the threats of forced removals escalate. For Making Contact, I'm Luz Ruiz in Chiapas, Mexico.
The region surrounding Montes Azules in the Lacandon jungle is highly militarized. In the municipality of Ocosingo, just on the edge of the Montes Azules Reserve, an enormous Mexican flag waves high above an army base. Visible for miles, the flag, as big as a galleon's sail, seems to be a reminder for those who would defy authority. Onesimo Hidalgo, co-director of the San Cristobal-based Center for Economic Research and Social Action, says that one-third of Mexico's military is stationed in the region.
En términos militares hay en el estado se maneja no hay un número exacto porque.
In military terms, in Chiapas, there isn't an exact number, because the army, well, it's like a laboratory for their training. So every 6 months, they change the soldiers. They come from other states to train here. They come, and then after 6 months of training, they return to the other states where there are armed movements. So we can't give an exact statistic. But I think there are about 70,000 soldiers. The Mexican army has 210,000, and here in Chiapas, we're talking about 70,000. They say that in Montes Azules, in the whole jungle region, in the conflict zones, there are approximately 25,000, and we have counted about 256 military positions here. That's what we've seen. In the municipality of Ocosingo alone, there are 38 military positions.
Hidalgo adds that there's been heavy militarization in the region to protect the potentially lucrative natural resources in Montes Azules and the Lacandon.
Lo que tenemos son es que esta reserva ecológica de Montes Azules son hasta ahorita.
What we have there in Montes Azules is this ecological reserve. It is now about 331,000 hectares that have been named as part of this ecological reserve, and in this reserve there is oil. Geophysical studies have been done. And before 1994, companies were working in this region, and they did studies about the extent of uranium as well. Also, there are about 9,000 plant species concentrated on the ecological reserve. that companies such as Grupo Pulsar have expressed interest in. There's also a cloud forest, and I believe also a series of lakes that are part of the interest of transnational companies that would like to put in ecotourism facilities in the area.
Another dimension is the use of paramilitaries to intimidate communities in the jungle. Miguel Torres is with the community-based human rights group La Red de Defensores Comunitarios.
I think that this is a situation that the government is involved in putting fear into the communities, so that the people will leave by themselves, or at the very least they won't denounce anything or say anything. And we know that there's complicity on the part of the army and the federal preventive police with the paramilitary groups. It's not that the paramilitaries are directly setting up the evictions, but they're complicit in the pressure that gets exerted on the communities. The problem with the paramilitaries is very serious, because we are all indigenous. But with the influence of the government, of the army, of the federal preventive police, the communities get divided. And certain groups are paid to arm themselves and become paramilitaries. The kind of fighting within the communities is very difficult and very hard to manage.
Meanwhile, some communities, such as Nuevo San Gregorio, are preparing their own land management plans to show the Mexican government that sustainable agricultural practices are the best way to preserve the jungle. Miguel Torres.
This is what we've been saying all along. Some communities have been there for years and years, and they're not destroying nature. Maybe if we had the time and materials to destroy the forest, that would be one thing. But that's simply not the case. The government wants us to look bad. Obviously, the government is going to have to come up with all kinds of pretexts in order to justify the displacement of the people. Because there is a latent conflict here. The families that are living in Montes Azules are displaced people, and they are there because of the need for land and the scarcity of land in Chiapas. And they are there because of the paramilitary violence in their old communities. They were looking for refuge, and they went to the jungle. How could the government take these people who are refugees and make them out as criminals, and once again displace them?
The week I was in Chiapas, in early March 2003, the Mexican military appeared primed to excise several communities from Montes Azules, just as the Pentagon positioned battleships, aircraft, and troops in the Gulf region, ready for action if war was forced upon us, in the words of Commander-in-Chief George Bush. Military strategists in both regions of the globe were eager to strike for similar reasons, the weather. In Iraq, it was the heat and dust storms. In Mexico, the top brass wanted to beat the rains and mud. They can use their helicopters now, said one community organizer. There are no clouds. As it turns out, U.S. officials got their war on Iraq, but Mexican officials are just waiting for the right moment to clear the way for multinational interests in Chiapas, a gateway to Central and South America, and a critical region for Plan Puebla Panama. With the riches of one of the most biodiverse regions in the world, will Mexican officials take their cue from Washington that might makes right? So far, intense community organizing among campesinos in the region has made it difficult for Mexico to do so. That's it for this edition of Making Contact, program number 2003, Before the Rains, the Struggle for Montes Azules. Thanks for listening. And special thanks to Tatiana Schreiber for translation assistance. We had voiceover assistance from Bianca Augustin, Bodie Garrett, Kimberly Ross, and Jesus Solario. If you'd like more information about the subject of this week's program, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. Call that same phone number for CD or cassette copies. That's 800-529-5736. Lisa Rubin is our executive director, Peggy Law, founding director, associate producer Amy Pomerlo, office manager Rosalind Fay, associate manager Susanna Hines, senior advisor Norman Solomon, national producer David Barsamian, and I'm managing producer Philip Babbage. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. Until next time.